Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, and welcome to the Fly Girl Show. I am your host, Casey Grant, and we have a different type of show today. I did part one yesterday, and we're going to continue with Charles Oram on the part two. And this is our tribute for 9/11. And Charles is going to give us an account of his personal experience as being a survivor of 9/11. So I am going to reintroduce him, and we're going to start from where we left off on our interview for part one of the interview with Charles Oram, one of our survivors of 9/11. So here we go. Good morning, Charles. How are you?
Good morning, Casey. How are you today?
I am doing fine. I'm so interested in bringing part two to my audience. You and I had talked so long before I even started the recording, and there were so many interesting stories, excuse me, that you shared with me that I would like for you to share with the audience. So if you wouldn't mind just giving us a little intro of who you are. You're from New York, and you live in New York, and so therefore you were there obviously from the beginning to the end. So can you just introduce yourself to my audience, please?
Yes, good morning, audience. My name is Charles Oram, as she mentioned. I live in New York, Bronx County, New York, and at the time, at 9/11, I was working down at the World Trade Center, and I was a federal law enforcement officer with Homeland Security. At the time, it was U.S. Customs and Border Protection under the Department of the Treasury. But having said that, the purpose of me being down at the World Trade Center, building number 7, was because we had to qualify with our weapons every quarter in order to carry our weapons throughout the state and throughout the country. Having said that, we had to qualify at the range, which was located at the lower sub-basement of building number 7, tower number 7 of the World Trade Center. Now, on that particular day, which is one of the prettiest days of the season, it was absolutely gorgeous. Now, let me share something with you before I go into why I was down there. Prior to me going, I was going to take my, what we call POV, privately owned vehicles. I was going to drive it down to the World Trade Center, which I normally do because it's very convenient. But because of it being such a nice day and I wanted to get down there a little early and wanted to have transportation back home by subway, I decided to take the train down. And doing so, I ran a little bit late because of, for whatever reason, now maybe it was a God intervention, but whatever reasons were, I was running late, but I did take the train down. Now, the reason I mention that is because had it not been for me taking the train down, I may not be talking to you today. And the reason for that, because I would have had my privately owned vehicle at the World Trade Center in the parking lot right below.
Oh.
Not knowing what was in store for us, I would have probably tried to retrieve that vehicle, and I probably would have never gotten out like some of my friends and coworkers did not make it out of the garage because the building collapsed on top of them. But before that had happened, we were at the range, and we were in the process of preparing ourselves to qualify. And this was like a little after 8 o'clock in the morning. It was 9 of us there, some from New Jersey and some from the Bronx, or not just the Bronx, but New York and New York's proper. But when we were in the process of preparing ourselves to go to the range, which is a soundproof room. Now, keeping this in mind, Casey, is a soundproof room in the sub-basement of the World Trade Center. Very few people who go into that building even knew we were down there. They don't even know we existed because it was a well-kept secret because we were being trained with other law enforcement agencies, one being the Secret Service, the other one being Drug Enforcement Administration, and other law enforcement agencies that fell under Homeland Security. Now, when we were down there, we were all amongst ourselves. It was like a close little family of people, you know, ready to travel and, ready to train with our weapons so we can have our weapons prepared for the streets. Well, that particular day, when we were down there, we heard a very loud booming sound, and the range officer, Richie, had said, to one of the other offices, go outside and check and see what was going on, because the only thing we saw, the building shook. The building shook that bright morning. And when we was told, the officer comes running back into us and saying, get everybody out of here. Get ready because we're under attack. We didn't know what that meant until we got ourselves prepared to go back out on the street level. And when we exited the doors from the sub-basement coming up to the second level, we were met by firefighters, Department of Fire. They were coming up the escalators along with us. And I recall this, the reason I mention this to your audience is that a lot of those firefighters that was coming up the escalators with us to get to the second level towards the elevators, these were a lot of these young men who never made it out of the building. We exited the building, but they could not exit because they were on their way to fight the fire. Now, we didn't know what was in store for us until we got off of the second level and took the escalator down to the street level. We were standing between tower number 5 and tower number 7. And we were standing outside not knowing what was in store for us. Now, the funniest thing, when we turned around, we looked up, and the first plane that had hit was sticking out of the building, literally sticking out of the building. The tail end of the plane was sticking out of the building. Now, all this is happening to us rapidly, not realizing it was not really resonating at that particular time, because all we saw was the tail of the plane. Based on the information that we were receiving from the Port Authority is the landlord that runs the World Trade Center, and also the Port Authority Police is an agency that police that particular property. Well, we were being told by the PA system to return back to your offices because the offices were considered fireproof, and a lot of people who were not knowing that we had something coming before us in the future in terms of the plane, they returned back to the office based on the information they have obtained from the Port Authority landlord / police. And those who had returned, needless to say, a lot of them never made it out of the building. That's why we had a count of over 3,000 people who lost their lives. Now, another thing that a lot of people, you know, and you can chime in anytime you wish.
Sure,
no problem.
In regards
to what I'm saying. Now, having said that, when we didn't know what was in store for us, we were all looking up at this first plane that had ran into the building with the tail of it still sticking out of the building. A lot of people who wanted to get a closer look, the ones who were in the building that they considered secure and safe, they took the escalators as well as the elevators up above that floor so they can take pictures down of that plane sticking out of the building so they can share it with their family and friends. Now, they had no idea, Casey, they had no idea what they had in store for them. Now, a lot of them, and it was so crowded on us because we had exited the building. We had left because we were, to us, it was an opportunity for us to get out of there and go home because we figured we had the day off. We had no clue what we had in store for us. We had no clue what was going to happen next. Now, when we were all downstairs between those two towers, which were still erected at that time, we were milling about and talking about the devastation. We said, oh, gee, it must have been an accident. It must have been an accident of this first plane that hit the towers. And that's what that's how we perceived it, as an accident. And based on the information that was being disseminated to us through the PA system by the Port Authority authorities, landlord / police department, that a plane had hit the building, and we were told those who were able to return back to their offices because it was fireproof. Now, they didn't use that description, but that's what they were alluding to. They were alluding to the fact that being that the offices that you were in were supposed to have been fireproof, and they also had the sprinkling system if it needed to be used. Now, being that we had no office, we were coming from a firing range. So we had no business down there in the sub-basement because it was two stories below the ground level. We were two stories below. And so we had to exit the building because we wanted to go to the offices. We had no business in that office. We were in different locations. We worked in different sectors. So we were thinking, commonly speaking, that we were going to go home and we were going to have a day off. And that's how we
did it.
We were going to have a day off. And we were like chuckling amongst ourselves, we didn't have the slightest clue what we were going to witness. Well, we had no clue until when we started looking and then we saw things that was happening that was not, that was highly unusual, that was happening within those minutes, if you will. And as we were sitting about talking and how we're going to get uptown and how, because everything was normal in our mind. The subways were still working, the buses were still working. But as we were walking and talking within a couple hundred feet away from the World Trade Center, we noticed that there were so many fire engines reporting to the scene. Now, some of them were outside the New York City area. I remember seeing fire engines coming from Philadelphia. We've seen engine companies coming from Westchester County, places that were far removed from where we would normally see a fire engine coming from that great distance, because
yes,
they must have been alerted to the fact that they were under an emergency attack. Well, that was when things were still in place, keeping in mind that both buildings were still erect, and we were standing between these two massive towers. I mean, beautiful. The World Trade Center was something, too. If you've never been, you've missed a sight. But we were
exactly
going there so often that we took it for granted. We didn't, you know, it was a thing that, you know, it's just like anything else. If you live amongst things that is considered something that would you keep in your mind forever, when you're living like that, when you see it and you take it for granted, you don't pay much attention to it, but they were absolutely
exactly
beautiful. They were absolutely beautiful. Now, we were standing there talking, and we were having a good time and relaxing and ready to walk away.
But let me ask you this. How were the people reacting on the ground? Now, you looked up and saw the plane, and how were the other people reacting to it? Were they running away from the area still, or were they just pretty much looking at this plane in amazement and disbelief?
Well, it was a combination of both. Mystified.
Yes.
Mystified, to say the least, because now, keeping in mind,
yes,
we were not told that we were in imminent danger. We were not told that, because you keep in mind that they were telling us, the locals, the people who were coming from the village, we were told that return to your office. Now, if they told you that, they didn't, you know, you couldn't see it as
exactly.
See, so keeping that in mind, when you were told, because they didn't see it as imminent danger, they just saw it as something that may have happened, an accident. Someone, whoever was flying may have lost route and accidentally ran into the World Trade Center. That's what they had thought, because based on the information they were disseminating, that they were telling people who were working in the building, return to your office because it was safer than being out, because they thought that if something fell off the building, something as simple as a brick or something fell off the building, you may have gotten hurt, not knowing what was coming next. Now, as I was talking to you, we were talking, like I mentioned, we were between Tower 6 and Tower 5 and Tower 7, which was both of the towers. We were in between and talking. And as we were talking, we were walking away from it. And then we had no idea the amount of people that was up in those higher levels taking pictures of what they saw, the plane accidentally being flown into the building accidentally, not knowing. A lot of people were in the so-called safer towers was not hit yet. They were in the next tower over, above the floor where the plane had felt, where the plane had ran into the 88th floor. They had gone, they had taken an elevator above that, like 101 or whatever, above that, taking pictures down and telling their family and friends what they were viewing.
Yes.
And then now we were down there and we looked and we saw a shadow flying over. It was another plane, but this plane was so low. I said, gee, this plane is very low. We all thought the same thing. We may not have echoed those sentiments, but we pretty much said it in our mind. Wow, this plane is very low. And I'm going to tell you, Casey, I'm going to tell you how low it was. It was so low that we saw silhouettes of people in the windows of that plane. That's how low that plane had become.
Oh, my goodness.
When we looked, and the belly of that plane, it was a huge plane, and the belly of that plane was pure white. Pure white. I mean, the belly, it was just a pure white plane. And we said, oh, my God. And it flew over us, and it was so low that the shadow was overcast. Over those who were on the ground level, all we saw was a shadow flying over us, and we saw the plane, and it flew past us, and then it made a complete turn, 180-degree turn, and flew right into the next tower. And when it hit the next tower, when it hit, all we felt was we saw a big orange and yellow ball of fire shoot from the plane and shoot straight up into the air. But the intensity, the heat was so intense that we felt the heat down on the ground level we were at. Now, you're talking about that's 100 and some odd stories up. But it was such a huge ball of fire that when it hit, it never exploded. It the plane did not explode as we as well, you saw it later on TV. But we saw when it hit, when it first hit, it didn't. It looked like it actually sliced itself into the building. It didn't hit the building and explode right away. It literally sliced itself into, like it was being cut into the building. It was literally being cut into the building, and that's what I saw. And I don't know why. Other people may describe it differently, but this was my perception of it when I was standing below, looking up and seeing the plane hit. And when it hit, we were like in disbelief. Then we realized that it was no mistake. We realized that it was no mistake, and that we were confused and scared and afraid and not knowing what was going to happen next. Now, a lot of things you did not know. One being that within minutes, if you will, we had fighter jets that was flying at a low level in that area. And those fighter jets, from what we were told later, came out from Virginia. And they, you know, well, a fighter jet can get to New York from Virginia, I guess, within 10 minutes. That's how fast they move. And now we saw these Army Green fighter jets, quite a few of them. I can't remember the amount of numbers. I can't remember that. But I do remember that they were flying low, and they were scaring us to death because we thought that we were going to be attacked by them, not knowing that they were our fighter jets. We didn't know.
Oh, okay.
No, we didn't know. Because, see, you got to remember, we weren't hearing nothing. We weren't being told anything because there was no communication on the outside.
Yes.
You know, only thing we heard when what we started hearing is when the cars started stopping, all the cars in the area started stopping, and they had their radios on. And that's when we start hearing bits and pieces as we were walking away from the tower. So we were getting information from the radios from those who were motorizing themselves.
Yes.
Listening, mm-hmm. And they every car that was in motion stopped. All the cars had stopped, and we were hearing every car was on some type of news station, but it didn't matter. They were all broadcasting the same news information. And that's how we were able to obtain information from the newscast as we were walking away from harm's way. Now, I think I mentioned to you last night, Casey, that I was with an associate of mine, a good friend of mine, and he was counting, and I didn't know. I said, "What are you counting, man?" He said, "I'm counting the people who are jumping off of the World Trade Center." And I said to him, "Negron, turn around, stop counting." Because when I look back, sure enough, I saw what I describe as stick people. Now, you know what I mean. You know how when I describe a stick people, a person with a big head and little sticks like they did years back when they used to have cartoon characters.
Yes, yes.
That's how we – well, see, they were so high up that all I recall very clearly that I seen two stick people come together, and I seen them both leap from the World Trade Center, whatever floor it may have been. But all I recall was seeing two stick people coming together and embracing each other, and then jumping. And that's what I do recall. They were jumping because, you know, they jumped because the heat, from what I was told, it was so intense that
yes.
their shoes, that the leather on their shoes was melting. Anything that they had, their clothing was burning up on their point. They were singeing. They were burning to death in that heat because that the steel girders in the building was so hot that it was like being in a furnace, and they were breathing in heat. I mean, it was beyond you could ever imagine. I mean, the hairs on their bodies was just burning. From what I'm
I can't
told.
Even imagine, because at that point, there is you're damned if you do and damned if you don't. You know, how do you? And we'll never know, and I hope not to ever know. To have to make that choice, do you? You know you're not going to make it if you leap out the window from 100 feet up. You know that. So when you're locking arms with another person, you know you're leaping to your death.
And you know you're looking at people who you know is going to be the last person you see. You know, I had to, for all my own edification, I had to inquire about. And I was hoping, and this was my dream, that I didn't want to see no one suffer to that degree, but I had spoken to a friend of mine who was a firefighter, city New York firefighter, and I asked him, I said, "Listen, let me ask you something, just for the sake of knowing, when a person jumps at that level, do they die before they hit the ground, or do they have a heart attack?" He says, "No, 99, if not more, will hit upon impact, will die upon impact, meaning that they're seeing the ground coming up towards them.
Oh.
Now, some of them, now it's funny, I'm looking at the news, it's on TV right now, they're showing something on TV. Strange, we're talking out, it's on TV, isn't that strange? But having said that, when he enlightened me, it made me feel so bad about the fact that all those people who lost their lives, who had no other recourse but to go that route. And they embraced each other, whoever, they could have been the best of friends, or they could not have even known each other. That's not the point.
Exactly.
They just knew, they knew they couldn't take it no more where they were at. And they says, we have no recourse now, let's go. And this, and they embraced each other, and they went together.
That the idea that you're asking that question, that's one of the things that kept me going for all my years of flying for Delta for 35 years. And people would ask me all the time, are you afraid, or did you ever have a situation? I never was afraid, because I thought, as you thought, that I would pass out, have a heart attack or something, and would never know. But now, since we've had accidents where people have survived, now I'm like you when you ask that question. I realize that I would have known. You do know until the bitter end, unless you're fortunate to have had a heart attack, because some of those people did, for the grace of God, some people did have heart attacks and passed out and did not know. But for those that jumped, that has to haunt you forever.
Well, you know, I remember there was a police officer. Her name was Mary. An Irish police officer from Port Authority. Now, when we were trying to exit the building, you got to remember, the building was still intact, and people was jumping. Now, we had to go, we had to be told when to run, because bodies was, people were jumping out of the windows, and we were in harm's way. So it was her job to look above and to tell how many people at a given time can run and get away from harm's way, so nobody, so whoever was jumping will not fall on you and kill you. So shout out to Mary. Police officer Mary. Heavy set Irish, apparently she was Irish, Port Authority police officer. And she was the one that was giving us instructions when to exit the area and when to run. And all we heard was like balloons bursting. Now, if you recall, like you say, if you take and fill a balloon full of water, and if you throw it from a height, it would explode. Well, what we were hearing was balloons bursting and exploding. Well, in fact, they weren't balloons. They were people.
Exactly.
They were exploding. When they hit the ground, they were exploding, you know, because they're 80, you know, our body is 80% fluid. And when we hit the ground, it exploded. Now, we didn't see much of that, but we did see things that I don't even want to describe at this point, because I kind of keep it in the back of my mind. I don't want to bring that up because it's still a little bit too graphic. But It was a day that you will never forget, but yet still you don't want to remember.
Exactly. And we have to, out of the respect for those who lost their lives, we have to remember. And we have to remember for our country and for our safety and everything. But you're right. You don't want to remember, but you can't forget.
And you know, Casey, having said that, it's been 16 years now since that has happened. And I've only been back down there one time since that, because I have no reason to go back. I have no purpose to go back. I survived it. Now, you got to remember now, a lot of people who were first responders, they're still dying from the aftermath of that dreadful day. They're still dying from the aftermath. Now,
yeah.
I'm going to be very real about this. A lot of people who took it back now, well, greed is greed, and it is amazing. Greed is a hell of a demon. A lot of people who are working as first responders went down there for several reasons, and I'm not demonizing nor am I criticizing, but a lot of them had returned back because it was an opportunity for them not only to get overtime, but to also bring out what they could find. Now, you got to remember now, by that time, the buildings have already collapsed. So now the first responders, a couple of days later, had gone down, and they were working around the clock, great overtime. And also, you got to keep in mind that underneath the World Trade Center, we had gold and all kinds of precious jewels. We had jewelry shops. You can just imagine what was down there that they could have found. And, you know, for whatever, whatever. You know, I'm not saying they were all guilty of that.
No.
But some were. Some were.
There are people who take advantage and opportunities of, you know, someone's mishap. And so there's always going to be that. And we would like to say, and as you said, you're not putting anyone in that category as a group, but there are always opportunists in any type of a situation like that. And even I'm sure people probably go back down there now. I've gone to the new site, but you never know what is still being found. You know, there's always some residue that's some locked up in something or wedged between a building, and that you're going, this has to be remnants of that. But that's a different point of view from this tragic situation, of course.
But, you know, unfortunately, I didn't want to be part of that because I deal with people on a regular basis, and I know how some people are, and I know how some people were, not realizing that God punishes you in different ways. When you don't have honesty in your heart and integrity in your heart, you may suffer later on in life. Like a lot of people, you know, Tracy, a lot of people who, in fact, had gone up above to take pictures of that plane sticking out, not knowing that there was another plane coming. I suspect that a lot of people, if they would have exited that building like they should have, well, because they, I mean, you know, following the PA system, I'm assuming that they were basing it on, well, let me go back. But they figured if it was safe enough for them to return to the office, I guess it was safe enough for them to go up above and take pictures of the plane that was protruding from the first tower.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of, it was, people was rushing to those elevators to get upstairs so they can take pictures. They couldn't, it was so crowded you couldn't even get in the elevators. You couldn't even get any of, people was rushing up to go above the first level where the plane had hit. Now, another thing I got to share with you. When the ball of fire, when that plane hit, the ball of fire that shot up, there was also balls of fire that was coming down that elevated the shafts. So when the elevator doors open, you know, fire looks for oxygen. And
yes,
when the elevator door opened, all those people were standing there waiting for the elevator was burned to death, because when the door opened, the fire shot out of that tram,
yeah,
and it shot right through the entire first floor and whoever's in that reach. And the second thing, you know, the engine from the first plane was found five blocks away on Church Street. Was five blocks away when the first plane hit. The engine came off the plane, fell off the plane, and it rolled five blocks away. It was killing people as it was going down.
Oh,
can you
my
imagine?
Goodness.
Oh, yeah. See, you don't see a lot of these things you didn't know. Because it was not,
well, we didn't think
not,
about it. We didn't think
no.
about these different things. And, it's you know, it was horrific just to imagine the airplanes flying into the buildings, that these other points, no, you never would know. So many other lives were lost just by the engine rolling down the street.
Yeah, that's right. So you did that part you didn't see. And what about the glass that actually shattered from the first impact? The glass that killed people flying out of the building, because the building was still in the wreck now prior to it falling. But
yes.
Now, there was a woman who I witnessed, a young woman who had a piece of grass that had penetrated her torso, and she was being given her last rites by chaplain judge. He was a fire, the fire department chaplain. He was giving her last rites. I witnessed that. Me and Richie, the range officer, and I, we witnessed that, because he had pure white hair. He was in a fireman's rain gear, and he had a white helmet. And he had a cross, you know, instead of him having the insignia of that fire department, he had the cross because he was a chaplain. And I watched him giving the last rites to the woman. He was giving the last rites. And the reason I'm mentioning that to you, I saw him alive. When I saw him, I was looking out at him, giving the last rites to a woman who had this thick piece of grass that had penetrated her torso. She was already gone, but there was no blood. I didn't see any blood. All I see was a big, thick, thick piece of glass through this woman's torso. Young woman.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know who she was, but she appeared to be young because it was like a second story above when I was looking down at what's his name, the chaplain judge, and he died as a result of the building falling on top of him. He died down in that same area that he was giving his last rites. So of things that I witnessed, these are things that I personally witnessed that I can speak about now, but I couldn't speak about 10, 15 years ago.
You
can imagine, but you can say, my only concern, like I said to you last night, my real personal concern was about the children.
Yes.
That were, the children, we had a place called for Fed Kids. Fed Kids was a little daycare center that was used for the federal employees who worked at the World Trade Center to bring their children, to leave them there at 8 o'clock in the morning and to be picked back up at 4 when they got off work. It was very convenient, and I guess it was a reasonable rate because most people would have, you know, instead of them having to go someplace to take their children, they would bring them there. And I think it was large enough for about 80 or 90 kids, if I recall correctly, because it was beautifully done. It was a nice, and you see these kids, they used to tie ropes around these kids. They tied them all together, and they would bring them up in the truck. That was beautiful, and I used to enjoy that on my lunch. I would sit there and watch these kids beat up each other with rubber hammocks and things like that. It was cute to see them. They were young kids, you know, some as little as maybe 8, 9 months, two or three years. So it was nice. And I always concerned myself, but then I said, oh, God, I hope nothing happened to those kids. And lucky for us, that based on what I read later, every one of those kids got home, got out of there safely because they were right near the escalators. And when it happened, when the plane hit, they got those, because when the plane, see, you got to remember, I survived in 1993 when they first tried to topple. I was at the World Trade Center then, too. I survived in 1993, but nothing happened other than six people lost their lives that time. But the second time, of course, that, you know the story about that. It toppled it. But they tried to do that in 1993, but they failed. But they came back with vengeance.
You have been in two attempts.
Three. I was down in Atlanta, Georgia, when the bombing took place, when that gentleman tried to blow up the place, and I was at the World's, that was when they had the World's Fair, I mean the World's, when Muhammad Ali, that's when Ali came down with the, was at the Olympics, during the Olympics, and Ali had the torch. I was working down there, I was assigned to work down there, and that's, we had a presidential detail. So we were working out at the presidential detail, because that was Bill Clinton was the president at the time. And so it was in 1996. And I was down there then. So a lot of people, not that a few people lost their lives, but I was right there that same night when the guy came up through the place to try to blow it up. And they caught him. It was a big fluke. But I was down. I survived all three major events that happened in the United States. I survived all three. In 1997, in 93, and, of course, 9/11. So I said to myself, I must be here for a reason. And for whatever that reason is, you know, I'm still trying to find it. But whatever it is, maybe I'm serving God's purpose. I don't know. I question it, and then I leave it alone.
Well, you have to. And I'm sure that you are serving God's purpose, because if you weren't, you wouldn't be here. So you can't say you guess. You are serving God's purpose. You don't know it. You're not aware of it, but he will reveal it when it's your time for it to be revealed. But the hauntingness of all of this has got this to be has to be tremendous. How are you coping with everything? Do you go for counseling? I know you're prayerful. So how do you put this in the proper category for you to be able to move on?
You know, you pretty much put it in the back burner, and you don't really let it resurface until it's asked to be resurfaced. Like when you asked me to speak on it, I was on a speaking circuit, and I'd never forget when I first went out the first year when I was asked to go around and speak about being a survivor. Now, I never forgot how warmly I was received by these young Caucasian women who didn't see color. All they saw was this person who survived because I lived it. Now, they have heard about it. They read about it. They were told by friends. But I was a person who was actually there, and they actually cried. They actually cried and embraced me and said, I'm so glad you survived. And they meant it. They really meant it, because I was telling them history. I was giving them something that I was there personally. I actually witnessed, I actually saw the plane hit. I felt the heat from the plane. I mean, they were just able just to imagine that. But in fact, I was sharing with them what I lived through, and they were so compassionate and so caring that color didn't make. See, when you go through such a traumatic thing in your life, when the world itself is affected by it, people come around and they rally towards each other.
And we come together.
We come together. It may be short lived, but it is lived.
Well, you know, that's the thing that I was home, and I will always remember. I had called my niece to wish her a happy birthday, and I was watching TV because I said, I'm going to watch the news today because I was so busy I had not done that. And I saw the first plane fly into the building, and I was confused because I thought it was a movie. And so I interrupted my singing happy birthday to her, and I said, "What? I don't know what this is." She was in New Jersey. And she said, "Well, what is it? What is it, San?" And I said, "I don't understand if this is the news or it's a movie." And then I realized it was the other plane flying into the building. And so by my telling her on the telephone and she screaming at the things, the event, the account of what was going on, she informed her office mates what was going on. And that's when they knew what was going on and tuned in. I was paralyzed for the rest of the day because in my mind, I was going through what I knew the flight attendants were going through, what the crews were going through. And I was so disturbed, I was paralyzed. I couldn't move. And my friends were calling me because I was here all by myself. And my friends were calling me to make sure I was okay. And I finally, about a day later, I was able to get up and I went to church, as a church on the corner, and I was there crying. And a woman behind me said, "Do you mind if I sit with you?" She was there praying and I don't want to say celebrating, but it was her anniversary of her husband's death. And you're right, strangers pull together, because she hugged me as I was comforting her for her loss, and she was embracing me at the loss of all those lives and just the fact that I was in aviation. So, yes, in times like that, we pull together, and you're right to say it may not last long, but this is something that we will all be affected by. And then for me to talk to you, I had no idea when we were talking that you were a survivor. So it was in my mind all last night to think of listening to what we had talked about and feeling what we talked about. You talked to me about the fumes and the heat and the glass cracking. Those are visual things that are embedded in your mind forever.
You know why? Because it becomes part of your DNA. You've actually lived it. It's like saying you don't know what it's like to feel pain unless you've actually felt that pain.
Yes.
You know, you
don't
can
imagine, but you don't really know.
You can imagine, and you can be sympathetic. And
you can
be
sympathetic.
You can. When you come, it's like burning your hand. If you say, "Oh, gee," and people will say that to pacify you, if you will. Say, "Oh, I feel so bad," and, you know, "Oh, I'm so sorry that happened to you." And then they move on and go to the movies and forget about what you had just said. But you're
exactly
the one, you're leaving behind that person who's still feeling that pain.
Yes.
You know, it's like when you go to the hospital, see a person who's terminal, you know, you're there for the reason of showing respect. But now you come and you see that person, you're looking over that person's in pain and suffering, and you're saying, "Oh, hang in there, God has a plan for you." But, you know, you really mean that for that moment. But when you leave that person behind, you're leaving that person still in pain and still suffering. But you mean what you said for that moment. But as soon as you walk away, you go back to doing what you do, whatever it may be. It may be going shopping. It may be getting your car washed. It may be going home and cooking a meal, because you're not in pain. But you always say you want that person. You don't want that person to leave you. You say, "No, I don't want you to leave me," because you're saying it for selfish reasons.
Selfish reasons, exactly.
But see, you know, and it's natural now. Don't feel bad about it, because You may be saying it for selfish reasons, but you mean it at that time. Mean it. You say, but then when you walk away, as soon as you walk out of that hospital room or out of that institution, you go back to your norm. You go back. You go to the movies. You go meet your friends. You go to dinner. You have a few cocktails. But then you tell that person you leave behind who's suffering, I'll see you tomorrow. And that person is still suffering, but you don't want them to go nowhere. You want them to stay there for you to come. If you can't make it tomorrow, you say, oh, I can't go. I won't go see them tomorrow. I'll go the next day. Not knowing that that person you leave behind is still suffering, and they don't want to be here. Sometimes they don't want to be here. See, so when I walked down that street that day on 9/11, there was a woman that was coming towards me, very attractive young woman, in a daze, and she had no shoes on. And she was just walking like in a daze. And a guy looked and said, oh, man, that's Susan Sarandon, the actress. And he said, oh, Susan, can I get your autograph? She said, get the, and I won't use the language she used. She said, get the away from me. I'm trying to get home to my family. Just leave me the. And I looked, and I saw who she was. And I said, oh, but I didn't, all I saw, forget about her celebrity. I didn't care about that. All I saw was a woman who was concerned about getting home to her family.
Yes.
See, she was one of us. She was suffering the same way we were suffering. Okay?
Absolutely.
Forget about celebrity status. It doesn't matter. Because when you suffer, you suffer regardless of how much money you get, who you are in society, you are still suffering the same way that people who have nothing that are suffering the same way.
Well, you know, you're bringing it back to, yes, we are. And everything that you have said, I totally agree with you, and we do. Number one, I wanted to comment about we must move on. And for us being able to, we give the words of comfort to people the best that we can. You say a prayer and you move on because we can't cope with a lot of things. And so, therefore, you try to be as encouraging and supportive to those who are suffering the best that you can. That's how we are equipped. That's what we know how to do. That's the best that we can do. The second part of it I wanted to say with dealing with that, I hope that people, are friends of the survivors and the ones who have lost, you know, their loved ones in this incident, and then babies were born after that, and so they never even knew their fathers or their parents, you know, they never knew their fathers. I hope that these people are still reaching out, that they know that they're feeling the love and the support that we give them every day. And we just don't wait for the anniversary to have a show, to have it on TV, to make remarks. I really hope that these people are getting support and love from people on a continuous basis.
You know, I wish I can say that is in fact happening. I would be very hypocritical to say the least. It doesn't work that way, unfortunately, unless it hits home personally.
Yeah.
If you know, unless you can make a story out of it, so you can glorify whoever you are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it goes back to what I'm saying about a person who is suffering versus the person who comes to see that person suffering. When that person who comes to see that person suffering, they go back to their real world and they leave that person behind who's suffering. The same thing applies, the same principle. The same people who lost an uncle or a father or a brother or a sister, they are still suffering because they're suffering with the loss of that person that they knew personally. But now that don't mean it's going to stay forever. They move on, just like you said, Casey, they move on. They forget, and, you know, because that's how grieving is. You can grieve. I was taught, you know, because I still go through grieving for several things, personal things as well as for what had happened on 9/11. But you find that you're allowed to go because life goes on. As much as you love the person who you may have lost, you're not going to go with them. You can't go with them.
No.
You know, and just like a person who you love who may be in pain, you can't take their pain. As much as you would like to take some of their pain, not all, because how much pain can you endure?
Yes.
You really don't know. You really don't know. So you have to say to yourself, I come, I show my respect, and I go back to my real world. I'm not going to sit back and say, I want to take all your pain, because you know that's not real. That doesn't happen.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen. So when I go down, see, for me to go back down to the World Trade Center for all those anniversaries, it serves no purpose for me. What's the what's the purpose for me? I've lived it. I don't want to keep reminding myself of what I witnessed.
No.
I don't want to do that.
No. Nope. You have to be able to make it. You have to take care of yourself. You have to be able to. You've got to function in your world, and you mean a lot to other people where you have to be sane. And it seems like it's probably just an easy thing to say, but prayer is the best thing you could give anyone. And at that point, you move on because it is God's will as to what's going to happen. Now, let me ask you a question. Do you still are you still on the speaking circuit for the 9/11 event for people, or how do they schedule you to come?
It's not that important no more. See, it goes back to what we were saying. It's not that important no more. See, it was important for X amount of years, but it's not that important. Too many other things have happened since, and they're happening now. Natural disasters are happening right before our eyes. So we don't concentrate on that no more. But we concentrate on the anniversaries. Now they're gonna put a big fanfare on the 20th anniversary. It's been 16 years now, but now that's kind of an off year. But the 20th anniversary will be stronger than maybe the 15th anniversary, or maybe stronger than the 14th anniversary, because those are off numbers. But when it rounds itself up to 20th years and then 25 years, it puts a lot of emphasis on. And then you got changing of administrations too. Government has changed.
Yeah.
You know, and so they build another tower down there. It's not the World Trade Center, as it were, but they have another that took the place of it. They took years to build it, but it's up there now. So when it comes now, there's a party. You know, let's go down and celebrate the names. How many times can you read those names of all those family members who have lost a loved one?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and it takes for hours. They read it, and it's just, you know, ceremonial, which is a good thing. And it's happening in every borough of the city, you know, not just only the World Trade Center, but in the Bronx.
And a moment
Queens,
of silence for everyone, yes.
That's right. That's right. But, you know, you have to ask yourself, how real is that? You know, you have to ask yourself, how real is that? You know, listen, a lot of those women who lost husbands have been remarried and got kids with the second husband. A lot of those little girls who lost their fathers, you see what I'm saying? They moved on. They went to college. They got their own families now. Their father was in the past. That was 16, 17 years ago. So it you don't sit back and say, gee, if he was still here. You don't do that. You have to keep living. You can't.
You do. Well,
them.
You do. You have to. And that's what we said. You must move on. You have to move on. You cannot get stuck. Because if you get stuck, you're going to lose your mind. So that's life. We have to move on. We have to put it in the proper place. And you have to move on. You do.
You know, it's
but we can't forget.
No, we can't. And don't, especially if it affects you personally. You know, I read a lot of books, and sometimes I read about what the character is doing in the book. But I don't know. I've never lived that life, even back during the time they were, you know, going through racism and Jim Crow and all that. You know, I'm sure it was a horrible time. Horrible time. But, you know, it was a terrible time in everyone's life. But we didn't live it. We understand. But listen, if that is the case, think about all the people who don't vote. You know, all what we went through, the lives we lost just to have the right to vote.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? But yet and still, see, it goes back. It's all based on the same principle. If it's current, if it's happening now, then you're involved. You're marching. You're demonstrating. But if things become complacent, things become normal, back to normal, then you don't feel no threat no more. So you go back to things that is no longer needed. And one of them, the World Trade Center, the emphasis on the loss of lives is not as important. It's still important to a certain degree, but not near as important as what's happening in Mexico or Puerto Rico or even in Florida for that matter.
Exactly.
So this is current.
Yes. It is current. It's news. It's what's new. It is the news, and we do have to. But we do have to take the time to reflect, and we have to remind, and you have to educate. It's just like slavery and the Holocaust. You have to. These kids don't know anything. The youth don't know anything about it. And so you have to give them a point of reference, and which is what I think always the anniversary. It's the anniversary of the tower. Yes. But what happened, the history behind it, what were the consequences behind that? What did Obama do to rectify or to justify I don't know if the word is justify, actually, but to deal with the situation at hand and why it happened. So we have to do this to every year. We will always do it every year. And you're right, the 20th anniversary will be a larger celebration, and then we will be re-educated. Because if you don't put it on the news, if you don't put it on TV, this is not going to be anything that the young kids are going to have a point of reference to.
You know, you're absolutely right. And it's unfortunate that we live this type of life. Complacency is a hell of a way of living. You know, if kids understand what we as a people went through, just to have the right to vote. Now, voting
exactly. Means
more than just voting makes change in society.
Yes.
If you're interested in change, you know it's sad to say you have ignorant people with free education. I can't understand that. You know, of course, college is expensive, but how can you have ignorant people with a free education? Because
yes. They
don't have the desire to better themselves. Because it's easier. Do you know it's easier not to do than to do? If you want to
yes. Get
yourself in shape, you have to get out there and apply yourself. I mean, you're saying, gee, why am I getting this? Why am I getting? You're not getting any better because you're not doing nothing about it.
Yeah.
It takes work. In order to form a muscle, you got to get rid of the fat, and you got to comply.
Yeah.
You have to comply to the desired wishes that you have. You have to eat a certain diet. You have to exercise. You have to do certain things. You have to You have to get up a little earlier sometimes. I'm not saying, you know, at a certain time you just say, oh, enough's enough. But when you want to get yourself in shape, not only physically, mentally too, in order to get yourself trained, you got to read, you got to apply, you got to stay up at night, you got to study, and it's not easy. I'm not saying it's easy, but the end result, you gain dividends. What's the sense of putting money into the bank if you don't get no profit from it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And from all of that you just said, I see that you not only speak on 9/11, but you're involved in school, something with school, with the kids, and you do different lectures.
I'm a mentor. Yes, I'm a mentor, and I've always been a mentor for years, even when I was working in federal government and law enforcement. 20% of my time was given to me by the government to go around and mentor kids. So that was 20%. They allowed me to travel the country, and I used to do it with such flair and such excitement because, let me share this with you very quickly. I'm born and raised in Harlem, and I come from a family of seven. Now, there's only four of us left now, but I come from a family of seven. We were on what they call home relief, welfare, as they call it today. We were poor, but we didn't know we were poor because we had each other.
Yeah.
See, so, and my mother had a formal education. She went to school at night. My mother became a psychiatric social worker. But now, that was unheard of. This was back in the 30s. That was unheard of for a black woman to go to college and do well in college.
Yes.
I mean, tuition was nowhere near as great as it is today. Of course not, but
absolutely.
Everything is relative.
Right.
Everything mm-hmm. is relative. So my mother emphasized the importance of education. It was up to us to take advantage of it or don't take advantage of it, but we knew the importance. See, I came from a peer pressure that if anyone thought you were trying to better yourself, they would laugh at you. You were considered a nerd. So I used to actually sneak and go to school at night. Well, I didn't sneak, but I would lie. My buddies would say, man, where you going? I said, man, I'm hanging out. I got this little chick I'm going to see. I was going to school.
Yes.
I was going to school. But I didn't want them to know that.
Yeah. Well, that's the beginning of the peer pressure that the kids are dealing with. There are other issues that they are dealing with today. And I was working, and we're going from A to Z on all of this, but just quickly, I was working with Chicago Literacy Program, and there was a girl that could not read. She was probably about 17, and we were telling her the programs that we had, and she said to us she had to go back and talk to her family before she was allowed to come back. And her family was a gang member family. It wasn't her biological family. And the instructor and I, as she walked away, we hung our heads low because we felt so bad for her. She wanted to learn how to read, but because of the peer pressure and the gang telling her she didn't need it, she wasn't allowed to come back. So we're going into a whole different avenue, and that's going to have to be another interview with you, because of your mentoring is something that I think is so valuable to these young kids today in school and for us that are too afraid to accomplish something. But you have to work hard, as you said, to accomplish anything. But to recap the 9/11 experience that you just went through, I hope my audience felt the heart-wrenching details that you gave as I did. I wanted to ask more questions, but I was so stunned by your account of everything that I couldn't even say it. I lived it. I walked down that street with you. And today will be a different day for me because I'm overshadowed by your recount of what happened and also going back and feeling how I felt that day, because it's deep in my soul and in my spirit being in aviation, because that was one of the scariest feelings to look up in the sky and not see a single plane for those few days. And I'm glad that you shared this experience with us. Is there anything that you would like to tell my audience or leave them with?
I would like to say that I'm blessed that I'm still here and being able to recount what had transpired. I hope that I would never have to see or witness something like that again in my lifetime. I'm not saying it won't happen again, because the world is strange, the world is acting a little funny, but I hope to God that we won't have to ever witness something as devastating as that, what happened on 9/11. So I'm hoping I'm able to share with those who have not lived it what it was like to live it. It's not a good experience, but it's an experience. It's something that I was happy to share with those who asked me. I don't do it that often, but when I'm asked, I'm more than happy to share that information. And thank you for having me, Casey Grant. I really enjoyed you.
Well, I really enjoyed having you on today, and thank you so much for taking your time to share with us this experience. And as we said before, this is something that we'll never forget. This is something that we are all going to have to educate our children to and remind them that we're fighting for freedom, we're fighting for equality, and this is America, and we are not going to let anyone intimidate us. I hope that you enjoyed this show today. I was very pleased that Charles was able to share his experience. Please tune in again. I am on Blog Talk Radio. I am your host of the Fly Girl Show. And Casey Grant, that is my name. And we are going to bring topics that are so interesting and enlightening to you that I hope that you will become one of my followers. Go on the internet, blogtalkradio.com/thefly girl 10. Have a wonderful day today, and reach out and touch. And remember, your blessings are as numerous as the stars in the sky. Have a wonderful day, and tune in with me next week as I bring you another wonderful show from the Fly Girl Show. Thank you. Have a good evening.